what we were pointing out is that the Israelites have come up here into this part of the country, and they did some battles over here, and they're going to go up this side of the Jordan River and do some more over there. And this is a little larger enlargement from down here up to a ways. And there were several battles that they had over here on this side. Oboth is mentioned in there, Moab is mentioned, and Ammon and the Amorites, the kingdom of Sihon. They did a battle with him and won that battle. And let's see, there were some others here. The kingdom of Bashan was mentioned. Anyway, what we were pointing out was that the Israelites, even before they entered into the land, even before they crossed the Jordan River, they had some battles on this side and defeated a lot of people. Turn to Joshua before we turn to Numbers. Joshua, the second chapter. Joshua, the second chapter, beginning with verse 8. Of course, this is way ahead of our number story. It says, before the men lay down, she came up to them on the roof and said to the men, I know. Now, who are we talking about here? Get a little bit of the context. Rahab and Jericho. And how many, this version says they're spies. How many spies went into Jericho?
There were two.
There were two? Three? Two? Okay. So she had them lay down up there on the roof and said to them, I know that the Lord has given you the land, and that the fear of you has fallen upon us, and that all the inhabitants of the land melt away before you. For we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea before you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to the two kings of the Amorites who were beyond the Jordan, to Sihon and Og, whom you devoted to destruction. And as soon as we heard it, our hearts melted, and there was no spirit left in any man because of you. For the Lord your God, he is God, in the heavens above and on the earth beneath. Now then, and she went on talking to them. So, simply looking ahead, Rahab is referring to what we were just talking about there, that we've heard about you people and what you've done to the kings over there, and she names two of them, and how that you have devoured the people before you, so they are fearful. So the before the Israelites go even across the Jordan River, people have heard about God's helping these Israelites defeat different kings in battle. And one of the people that heard was a fellow by the name of Balak, or Balak, however you want to pronounce that. And that's what this is about here, and you're familiar with it. I know it's a story that's been told over and over. This sheet calls it Balaam's oracles. And what Balak wanted Balaam to do. Just reading from this sheet here, under Balaam's oracles, it says, the huge moving band of Israelites was now striking fear into the hearts of the settled people in and around Canaan. And then it notes Rahab there that we just read. Balak, king of Moab, is greatly afraid of Israel and tries to hire Balaam to curse them. So who is this king? Balak, who is he the king of? Balak or Balak, however you want to say it, is king of Moab. Right here is Moab. So the children of Israel have been up and down here fighting, conquering. And this king, he says, I know the way to take care of those people. They've done all this fighting with these other guys, and he didn't want to be defeated. So he's going to call, let's see what the next sentence is here, greatly afraid, and tries to hire Balaam to curse them. And it goes on to talk about what Balaam does. Where is Balaam from? Anybody recall?
Pethor, near the river.
Okay. You're reading from the 22nd chapter of?
5.
In verse 5 of Numbers. Go back to Numbers now. That's where we are. It talks about Balak in verse 4. Sent messengers to Balaam, the son of Beor, at Pethor, this version says, which is near the river in the land of the people of Ammah. Let's see what a footnote says here. It's kindred, okay. And call him and come and curse this people for me. So from what we can determine, and there are other passages, I'll give them to you if I think of them, see them here in a minute. Balaam is not from that land, but he's a well-known, so we call him a diviner, that lived up actually where Abraham was from after he left the Ur of the Chaldees, up there, Haran and all that area up there, Amram or Arman, that's where this guy's from. Now, I've often wondered how long it took Balak to get Balaam to come down. We don't have that. Doesn't tell us whether he summoned him and said come, or I mean, because it would take a while to travel from Moab up to where Balaam is from. You ever thought about that? This is not particularly of great importance, but if you're even riding a donkey or a camel or something, it's going to take a while from Moab up to what was later Assyria, Haran, the city, Nineveh. Anyway, I don't know why I think that way. Well, man, it's going to take Balak sent these guys, and it took them 2 months to go up there to Balaam and bring him back, whatever. So that's what Balak is going to do. He's going to bring Balaam down. Now, who was Balaam? I've already called him a diviner, I think, didn't I? He was the son of, who was it, Beor? Son of Zippor. No, that's Balak, the son of Zippor. Balaam, the son of Beor. Was Balaam a prophet? God communicated with him, told him what to say. If I said, was Balaam a prophet of God, you'd still say the same thing. But if I meant Balaam was a prophet like Isaiah or Hosea, he wasn't a righteous man, was he? Or was he?
No.
I'm trying to get a little bit of a picture of his character.
He's interested in the reward.
Okay, that's what I want to emphasize. One of the things I want to emphasize, Balaam does speak for God. And simply stating, that's what a prophet does. He speaks for God. God says, this is what you say. This is what Balaam said. In fact, what does Balaam say when Balak says, I want you to curse those people? He said, I cannot
do anything
except what the words God gives me.
I cannot speak anything but what God's word gives me to speak. But that doesn't make him a righteous prophet, does it? And as Kelly said, he is for the reward. I mean, I hope we can get the greediness. Now, what Balaam is doing is not to please God, although he's going to speak what God tells him to speak, but what he's doing is to please his own, shall we say, greed, his own selfishness. And sometimes, I know years ago, I didn't catch that he was there for his own good, so to speak. But can God use, and this is the point I'm getting at, can God use a fellow that has ulterior motives? I guess we could call Balaam that. Yeah. Did he what?
Balaam. He did something to the Israelites, didn't he?
I'm sorry, I meant to tell you, my hearing aids are in the shop, so I can't hear well this day. Go ahead.
King Balaam did, or Balaam, didn't he do something to the Israelites to hinder them or of that nature? I thought he did something.
Well, he was told to do something. He was told to do something.
I thought he did something else.
Yeah.
He did something else. It was with his donkey.
Yeah, something. Yeah. Last Sunday's question is, did Balaam do something to the Israelites? Is that putting it right?
Yeah.
And in the sense that Balak says, I want you to curse these people, did Balaam do that? No, he didn't do that. So I guess we could say that Balaam did not hinder, did not hurt the Israelites. Ted?
If you find curse in this instance, what exactly is that?
Ted wants to know what curse, define curse for us. What is it that Balak was... I'm going to call him Balak. That's what I've called him for all the years. But as I said last week, the fellow that I've been listening to read the Bible on the internet is Balak. But anyway.
Verse 6.
What does verse 6 say, Brian?
Balak is talking, says, please come curse this people for me, since they are too mighty for me. Now, so it's not defining what Ted's asking, but... He says, perhaps I may be able to defeat them and drive them out of the land. So he wants something to weaken them, something done by whatever power he wants Balaam to appeal to weaken them so that he can defeat them.
Okay, and that's the reason we looked at the background that the people have, and read what we did there from Joshua. The people have already defeated these kings. Moab, king of Moab, looks at it and says, man, I better do something. These people are many, and they've won all these battles, so I'm going to call Balaam down to curse these people, whatever the curse might have been, to keep them or to put them in such a position that I can overcome them, win the battle if we have a battle with them. Okay? What the curse is, if it was a curse, Balak didn't say. Ken?
Some kind of psychological warfare.
Well, possibly, but he, in my mind, you could put a curse on people and they just all die. I don't know. Balak didn't say what the curse should have been, except you take care of those people so that I won't be defeated by them. Ken? Oh, yeah.
And so if God blesses a people, hey, good. But if God curses a people, not so good. Not
right.
Good at all.
Yeah. Whatever the action of the curse is, it wouldn't be good. Whatever the action of the blessing is, it's good. And God's going to bless them instead of cursing them, of course. So Balaam is approached by Balak to come down and curse the people. Now, also I think maybe picture in your mind that Balaam is a soothsayer, a diviner, or whatever you want to call him. Evidently, am I right in assuming this, if this is an assumption, that he's well known to be this type of person that can deliver a curse or a blessing or whatever it might be? Must have been, right? At least Balak knew about him way down there in Moab. Now, before I forget it, do we hear about this fellow Balaam anywhere else in the Bible?
Yep.
Yep. Jude is one place.
The Higher of Balaam.
And a book that is just almost word for word with Jude.
Peter?
Yeah, 2 Peter.
Revelation.
The book of Revelation, is he mentioned there? Okay, I don't think I have that scripture down, but Jude the 11th verse, 2 Peter the 2nd chapter, verse 15 and 16. Maybe it would be good to read those while we're thinking about it. If you're over there in Jude, and as I said, 2 Peter sounds very much like Jude. Jude, first of all, and Jude's talking about the manner of these people that are defile the flesh, etc. Verse 11 of Jude says, "Woe to them, for they went in the way of Cain and ran righteously in the error of Balaam for hire and perished in the gainsaying of Korah." So we know about all three of those groups of people. Lysander, and then we'll turn over here to 2 Peter.
Okay. In Revelation, that's where I found he did something. He told Bala.
Yeah. You don't have your glasses, and I don't hear my hearing aids. We're all right. Well, it sounds like it, doesn't it? Revelation 2, Lysander's reading from. I have a few things against you. This is talking to the church at Pergamum. And I have a few things against you because you hold to the teaching of Balaam, who taught Balak to cast stumbling block for the children of Israel and to eat things sacrificed to idols and to commit fornication. Did any of that is specific in the Old Testament?
Numbers 25.
Okay.
So, Lysander, when you said that, I was thinking you meant going to war against them in some way, but what he's talking about is there the Moab enticed Israel to sin.
Right.
Yeah. And he did. And you're right. He's right.
Okay. So, you got a verse in Numbers 25?
It's a the whole chapter.
Oh, the whole chapter. Okay, they went to Baal Peor. Baal means it's a god. Peor is a mountain, and there they taught them to worship to the idol god, and that's what John says in Revelation that he did. So he did more than just come and try to. Balak had Balaam to do more, or he did more than just come and curse them. In 2 Peter, the 2nd chapter, while we're over there near 2 Peter, in the 15th verse of the 2nd chapter of 2 Peter, talking about some of the false teachers there that will come. Verse 15, "Forsaking the right way, they went astray, having followed the way of Balaam, the son of Beor, who loved the hire of wrongdoing. But he was rebuked for his own transgression, and a dumb donkey spake with a man's voice and stayed the madness of the prophet." Much is getting a little ahead of what we're looking at today. But we all know what happened about with the donkey, and we'll talk a little bit about that. So, Balaam. It's kind of contradictory in my mind, but it's not really. But here is a man that says, "I cannot speak anything but what God tells me." But here's a man that is coming down loving the money that he gets, the hire. That's what he's down there for. But he's not a true prophet of God, as we've already indicated. He's one that he can't say anything what God puts in his mouth. I had another thought. Anybody else while I'm thinking of that thought? Go ahead, Lysander.
You didn't take the money, right?
Well, let's see. Yeah. What was it? We're getting to the results. So Balaam, three times we're going to see there's a sacrifice made. But when it's all said and done, and Balaam won't curse the people, what does Balak do?
He says, I would have rewarded you handsomely, but the Lord has kept you from being rewarded. And I think Balaam kept going to God, maybe hoping God would change his mind.
Two things there, yeah. What verse did you read from there, Kelly?
That was chapter 24 and verse 13.
Numbers?
Yeah.
Of Numbers. Now, when Balaam did come down, Balak tells him, now, I'll give you all of this. And this is after one of the sacrifices. There's three times, let me get this before us, three times Balaam tells Balak, get seven, how many animals and what animals?
Seven altars, seven bulls, and seven rams.
Seven bulls, seven rams, build an altar, and that's what Balak does. Now, Balak tells Balaam, I'll give you this and this and this. And then he increases it the next time. He said, I'll even make you an official, is my words, in the kingdom. So they sacrifice again. And Balaam can't do anything but speak God's word. They sacrifice three times at Baal, on different places around. And Baal Peor was one of them. And when Balaam doesn't fulfill what Balak wants him to do, then the verse that Kelly just read, you didn't do it, so I'm not going to give you what I said I would. Now, that's pretty good, isn't it? If the guy doesn't keep his bargain, then why? But anyway, that was the end of it. I mean, that was the result of it, that Balaam did not receive what Balak, if I understood Lysander's palm, yeah. Balaam did not receive what Balak had promised him because he didn't do what Balak wanted to do. So Balaam went back home empty-handed and without a place in the kingdom or whatever. Was there something else that we're... Yes, go ahead.
I just stumbled across this verse 24:1. Now when Balaam saw that it pleased the Lord to bless Israel, he did not resort to sorcery as at other times.
Yeah, Balaam saw what was going on, and that's where I think I said call him a diviner or a sorcerer. When he saw that God didn't do this, then he didn't resort to sorcery, which means that he was resorting to sorcery whenever or whatever he used to do back up in his country. And that's what Balak knew, and Balak had enough paganism in him. He figured this sorcerer can take care of my situation for me. Okay, just looking to see if there's another thought I was going to. Yes, what had God told Abraham and the fathers, we'll call them? I'll make of you a great nation, give you this land, etc. And I can't say it unless I give you the answer. Whoever, way back in Genesis 12.
Whoever blesses you, I'll bless, and whoever curses you, I'll curse.
Right. God had already promised that to Israel. Whoever blesses you, I'll bless. Whoever curses you. I thought of that because if Balaam had been successful, then God would have cursed him, I guess would be an assumption, but anyway, God had already promised Israel that's how he'd take care of them. And he did here by preventing Balaam to do anything that Balak wanted him to do. So, is God faithful?
Mm-hmm.
There's something here, though, that kind of bothers me. Let's see where it is in this sheet.
Is it 19 and 20 of chapter 24? Or chapter 22?
Chapter 22. Go ahead. 19 and what, Brian? Chapter 22?
Chapter 22, 19.
Go ahead and read it.
Well, 18 says, Balaam replied to the servants of Balak, though Balak were to give me this house full of silver and gold, I could not do anything, either great or small, contrary to the command of the Lord. Now, please, you stay also here tonight. This is when the envoy has been sent up to bring him back.
Right.
And I'll find out what else the Lord will do to me. God came to Balaam at night and said to him, if the men have come to call you, rise up and go with them, but only the word which I speak to you shall you do. So Balaam arose in the morning and saddled his donkey and went with the leaders of Moab. And then 22 is kind of a head scratcher, for me anyway. And God was angry because he was going.
That's one of the head scratchers I have.
An angel of the Lord took a stand in the way. Oh, now we're getting to the donkey story.
Yeah. Did Brian read that God said to Balaam, go ahead and go?
Yes.
He did. And then God was angry with him?
Yes.
I wrote myself a note and I said, see if this is makes sense or not. God sometimes denies the desire of the righteous because of love. I think we all agree with that. He sometimes grants the desire of the wicked in his wrath. I didn't read that. Grants the desires of the wicked? Yeah, he let Balaam go.
And there's another one. He sometimes tests either one, righteous or wicked, right?
Test them.
Test.
Test, yes. Yeah.
This looks like a test.
Yeah. And I don't know if this illustrates what I think also is involved here, and you say, nah, you're wrong. Sometimes, maybe even a child wants to do this. No, you don't do that. But no, you don't do that. Well, go ahead and do it. And if they do it, they get the punishment for it. But I don't know if that's what God is doing here. God in his wrath, I don't know, Kelly, go ahead.
I was thinking,
yeah. Yeah.
I can remember a few times when we'd ask mom and dad, can we do this? Uh-huh. And the answer was no. But finally they said, no, go ahead. And then you'd feel like, but I know you're not happy about it. No, I'm not happy about it, you know. And bad may come from it. But they
learn from the consequences.
They say, go ahead and go. And I feel like that's kind of what was going on here. God said, yeah, go ahead and go. But he wasn't happy about it.
Right. That's kind of what I've concluded, and like I say, it kind of puzzles. It's when we see that go ahead and go, but then he was angry with him when he did. Go ahead, Brian.
Well, the Lord says, before the Lord's anger, he says, only the word which I speak to you, you shall do. Well, that happened.
Yep.
Three times, Balaam does it. But then when we put together Balaam's motive with Jude and Peter and all of that, he was a greedy.
Yes.
Balaam
for hire.
Yeah, he's a greedy.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not going to get anything out of it.
There's another word for greed.
Let me see if I don't see the passage I'm looking for right now. Maybe I'll find it here in a second. But this sheet says, who can count the dust of Jacob in number? Right in the middle of our paragraph here. He has not observed it. There it is. Who, if you see the phrase, who can count the dust of Jacob or number 1/4 of Israel? That's number 23, verse 8, 9, and 10. And then, quote, he has not observed iniquity in Jacob. The Lord his God is with him. It now must be said of Jacob and of Israel. Oh, what God has done, exclamation point. He has not observed iniquity in Jacob. Did God not ever observe iniquity? I think there's an explanation here, but what is your thought? That's what that passage says. He's not observed iniquity in Jacob, and so he's going to bless them. That's the meaning of that there.
Well, they are.
Go ahead.
They are covered by blood.
Okay.
I mean, we've gone through Leviticus. They've been set out there in the wilderness with that tabernacle and everything, that tent of meeting and the blood and the offerings and blah, blah, blah. So
that's part of what my answer would be. I'll try to continue. Ken, go ahead. Why would God overlook the wrong that they did because of their righteousness? I answered it. They're righteous.
Not perfect.
No, they weren't perfect.
Not perfection.
But they didn't continue in their sin. God punished them. 270,000 people died, or whatever the number might have been, because of their wickedness, of Korah and all those other guys. But the people repented, and as Brian said, the sacrifices, the blood, they were not unrighteous because God forgave them.
Covenant.
The covenant that he made with them. That's the answer that I have to my quandary as to this quote here. He did not observe iniquity in Jacob. He did not, another part that might be, he did not observe, is what this quote here has it. He did not keep in mind the iniquity. Mm-hmm. When he forgave them, he forgave them. Go ahead, Ken.
I don't know if there's a connection or not, but it's been pounding in my head about Paul saying when he was imprisoned in Rome that there were some that were preaching the gospel. Some were doing it for the purpose of the gospel. Others were doing it to punish Paul. And somehow, is there a similarity in that? Or is that?
I don't know if there's a similarity, but there is the case there that those people who were preaching to harm Paul, Paul says, in debt the gospel of Christ was preached.
Yeah. They were doing it just for that purpose.
Yeah. But the point that I brought this up is because in my mind, God is faithful when men are faithful. And he looks at them, even though they committed this and this, and that's done with, they were cleansed by the blood. And so that's what he looks at. He does the same for us. Do we ever commit a sin today? Does God look upon our iniquity? Only if what?
We continue in it.
Yeah. Deep stuff.
Yeah. Great.
Okay. Great stuff. Okay. Let's see. I know I have some more here. You have another question while I'm looking to what else I had down here. Yeah. Again, we're getting way down in history with David. From this time to David's quite a time. And what kingdom is Balak a king of? What did we say?
Moab.
What did David do in 2 Samuel 8, verse 2? David smote Moab. And all I'm getting at is, Moab may not have been conquered while they were going through the land here, and Balak wanted Moab to curse Israel. But he conquered Sihon and Og and so forth. But Moab was eventually conquered by David. They may have had battles before that, but what I'm saying is, in 2 Samuel 8, chapter verse 2, David conquered them. Go ahead. Right, right.
Because they were relatives.
Right. Yeah, glad you brought that up. I think we briefly mentioned it 2 weeks ago or whatever, that they wouldn't conquer Moab and Ammon when they were coming through the land. And in fact, didn't they ask, who was it they asked, let me go around through your country? It was Moab, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Let us pass through here, and we'll not drink from your wells or anything. And as Mo said, they were relatives. And don't answer, Mo. Who were their relatives of? Moab and Ammon were? Lot's daughters?
Children.
Yeah. So they're distant cousins, right? Whatever. Pardon me? Twice removed, okay. Maybe three times, but whatever. I never did understand that once removed. Well, I do too, but. Oh, this is your cousin, maybe I said. Well, that's your cousin twice removed, okay. Where to? Yeah. All right.
Did you read the donkey?
No, that's what I wanted to do before our time is gone. That I know you know the account.
Never gets old.
Where is that found about where Balaam, all right, he's coming through the chapter 24?
22,
right. 22:22. I'll go ahead and read it so everybody can hear it. But God's anger was kindled because he went, and the angel of the Lord took his stand in the way as his adversary. Now this is talking to the way that Balaam goes. He's going to go to talk to Balak. Now he was riding on the donkey, and his two servants were with him. And the donkey saw the angel of the Lord standing in the road with a drawn sword in his hand. And the donkey turned aside out of the road and went into the field. You got that picture in your mind now? And Balaam struck the donkey to turn her into the road. Then the angel of the Lord stood in the narrow path between the vineyards with a wall on either side. And when the donkey saw the angel of the Lord, she pushed against the wall and pressed Balaam's foot against the wall. So he struck her again. Then the angel of the Lord went ahead and stood in the narrow place where there was no way to turn either to the right or to the left. And when the donkey saw the angel of the Lord, she lay down under Balaam. Balaam's anger was kindled, and he struck the donkey with his staff. Then the Lord opened the mouth of the donkey, and she said to Balaam, "What have I done to you that you have struck me these three times?" And Balaam said to the donkey, "How in the world can you talk?"
No.
No, you didn't say that. You know, I was thinking about this. How did language come about? We've got a few minutes to talk, just a second. I mean, how did man learn to talk? Maybe that's another way of saying it. Now, I know at the Tower of Babel, he confused their language, but they had one language. Now, that language, whatever it was that they had, how did they learn it? How did they come about speaking?
God gave it to
who gave it? Who was it that received it first? Adam and Eve. Adam and Eve would not have talked unless God had taught them to talk, kind of a way of saying it. If God can teach man to talk, he can teach anybody to talk, including the donkey, right? It's funny, but anyway, it's not. He opened the mouth of the donkey, and she said to Balaam, and he didn't say, "Well, why in the world are you talking?" No, he didn't do that. I don't know. If I'd been Balaam, I'd done the same thing. But if I'd been on this donkey and she starts talking to me, I might have started running or something. I don't know. Anyway, verse 29, and Balaam said to the donkey, because you've made a fool of me, I wish I had a sword in my hand, for then I would kill you. Now, three times this donkey saved Balaam's life, in a sense, because an angel is out there with a sword, and the donkey sees it, and she what was the first thing she did? She stepped aside.
Into the field.
And then she
pressed
her foot against the wall. And then she laid down. Three times she saves his life, and he wants to kill her. That amazes me, but...
What's amazing is he's not amazed the donkey's talking.
That's what I was getting at. If the donkey started talking to me, I'm going to start running or something. Yeah. I wouldn't argue with you. Go ahead, Ted and Toe.
Did Balaam realize how much money he can make off of talking to
Joe? Yeah, there you go. Joe?
He's kind of greedy, so.
I'll take this donkey down to the fair and man, I'll make a bundle.
Shrek wasn't around back then.
Shrek wasn't there.
But he's showing his stupidity there. He's dumb.
Yeah.
He's arguing with him.
Yeah. Stupidity or whatever, he's angry. Whatever you want to call it. Ken, quickly. Yeah. Yeah. With the angel sword you're talking about and Balaam's sword. Yeah. He didn't have a sword, so he couldn't kill her. So Balaam says she made a fool of him. And I guess in a sense, that's right. He was a fool. Yeah. And verse 30, and the donkey said to Balaam, she talks some more. Am I not your donkey on which you have ridden all your life long to this day? Is it my habit to treat you this way? And he said, no. I don't know where God intended for this to be funny or not, but it's just got to be funny to me.
It's
got to
be humorous.
It just shows it's not always death and sin and everything else besides showing stupidity.
Yeah.
It's showing humor.
Yep.
But I like Paul's argument, Paul's statement there. He even lost the argument with the donkey.
That's like losing an argument with himself.
Yeah. You have what, Mary?
I think God was laughing too.
He was what?
She thinks God is laughing.
Oh, yeah.
God actually is angry because he sent the angel, but
right.
Putting this together in writing, it does.
Yeah. But before our last minute's gone, verse 31, then the Lord opened the eyes of Balaam. He's going to see what's going on. And he saw the angel of the Lord standing in the way with his sword drawn in his hand. He bowed down and fell on his face. The angel of the Lord said to him, why have you struck your donkey these three times? Behold, I have come to oppose you because your way is perverse before me. The donkey saw me and turned aside before me these three times. If she had not turned aside from me, surely just now I would have killed you and let her live. And that's the reason I was saying that she saved me three times. Verse 34, then Balaam said to the angel of the Lord, I have sinned, for I did not know that you stood in the road against me. Now therefore, if it is evil in your sight, I will turn back. And the angel of the Lord said to him, go with the men, but speak only the word that I tell you. So Balaam went on to the princes of Balak. And he spoke only the word of the Lord. No matter how many times Balak said, curse these people. Now, even though Balaam, very quickly I'll try to say this, even though Balaam was wicked and greedy and so on, here's the definition of a true prophet. What Balaam did, spoke only the word of the Lord. And that's what Peter talks about, was in 2 Peter up there on the right-hand cut. No prophecy ever came. So what I'm saying is that gives us insight to what a
true prophet really is, so far as what a true prophet does, and that speak as God speaks, and he doesn't speak from himself. Okay, well, time's gone. Do we want to continue lesson 12 next week, or shall I give you lesson 13? Maybe I'll do that. And then if we want to say some more about lesson 12, then we can do that next week too. Appreciate your comments. Yes.
Something keeps coming to my mind when I see that word Moab. I keep thinking of mother of all bombs. You see the modern usage of that.
Moab.
Yeah. Mother of all bombs. Moab. M-O. Mother of
all bombs.
It's like a
mother of all bombs. That's their short.
That's it. Oh, bomb. Okay.